production.
Taking it down, it's us, we're back. We're the idiots from Taking It Down, the Alabama Takes discussion podcast for movies, television, e-more. Reach out to us at thealabamatake@gmail.com or any of our social media accounts from ye old Alabama Take. We do not have a social media account unto ourselves. We pretty much only use the Alabama Take, but boy, oh boy, do we have a ham of a show cooked up for you today. It's our plan to talk about some trailers, Obi-Wan Kenobi and House of the Dragon. We'll discuss Moon Knight as a whole, because the final episode's aired, so spoiler warning there, we'll talk about it, all of it, if we have to. We will dip our toes into HBO's return of more David Simon television, David Simon of The Wire and Treme fame, but now it's We Own This City. With me today, always, a man who knows that deep down New Orleans is haunted, it's Adam Moore.
I was basically living an episode of Treme this weekend.
Yeah, okay.
Speaking of David Simon. That's not true. That's not true at all.
We also have our pal, and folks, he writes all the music for your customer service lines when you call them. It's Donovan Reinwald.
It's great to be here.
Not as lucrative a gig as one would think. Heard by millions, paid by the dozens.
Heard by millions, loved by none.
Let's get into the show. The Done Up Real Good Listener of the Week. It's none other than our guy, Patrick Akers. Our guy. He's going to... There's a reason why I'm giving him Listener of the Week, and I honestly am losing track of who I've given it to, so this may be his second one.
I think this is the first.
Okay, cool. Because
I'm almost positive.
We're going to tie this back around to him in a little bit. Stick around for our middle break, where we make a few announcements. You'll want to hear what I'm talking about. Oh, y'all. Damn it, them people's going to play that Game of Thrones again, aren't they? They're going to... They're going to try to roll the dice again, aren't they?
They're rolling the dice on if I'm going to care. That's what they're rolling the dice mm-hmm. on. I got to say, I watched it again right before we started taping, so it would be fresh. And there's something about them showing kind of like the before times of like, remember when what you really liked about this show when there was a bunch of things going on in King's Landing and all this was happening and blah, blah, blah. And they kind of even teased the music a little bit. And I didn't expect to be sucked in as much as I was. It annoyed me when they even said games. It's a dangerous game we play or something like that.
You're playing the game.
Yeah, I hate that. I hated that with as much as I hated the final council scene in the piece of shit last season.
Did you feel like Leonardo DiCaprio's meme where you pointed and said, they said the name of the show?
Exactly. Hey, that's the name of our show.
They were definitely trying to push the old nostalgia buttons. That was my... So I also watched it right before we filmed this. And basically, I second Adam's review that there's a bunch of stuff that it was like, remember when there was intrigue? You loved intrigue. Remember when there were like... Old guys at feasts? You loved that. You had a blast. Remember when there were dragons? You loved the dragons.
We had a few season run where it was like a Sunday thing when it was on air for me and my wife, well, Natalie, who will be joining the show here in a bit, to go over to Donovan's place and watch Game of Thrones. And it was great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are good times. It kind of like made me think of that as much as the show itself. So maybe as bad as it burned me, maybe I can do it again.
You just got to get good friends for good times together.
So what are you giving this show?
What do you mean?
Like, you're going to give it 5 episodes, and if it's crap, you're done? You're going to give it the whole season?
I mean, the season's going to be 10 episodes, right? Probably.
You'd have to think.
I think that depending on what else is going on in the world come August, I kind of miss having like an appointment viewing, a Sunday night HBO appointment viewing. Maybe I'll get on board. Maybe I'll do it the old-fashioned way.
Watch it live?
Ish.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I always say something like this on this podcast, but I am, quote-unquote, very interested. But I am because it's brand-new showrunners. It's not Benioff and Weiss. So what is that? Are they just going to try to borrow as heavily from Benioff and Weiss's first 5 seasons as much as possible? Is it just going to be... like the kid in the kindergarten class who lays the trace paper over the Mickey Mouse and just traces it? Is that what?
Yeah, maybe so.
The trailer heavily implies that that's where we're going.
Yeah, that's the vibe I was getting, but at the same time, it like Adam and Donovan had said, it kind of scratches you where you itch a little, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we love this stuff.
I almost wonder now that the Ned Starkification of television has possibly run its course, like, I wonder if they're going to try to pull a lot of the same tricks or if they're kind of going to let it stew a little bit more. Maybe Matt Smith is dead at the end of the first episode.
I tell you what, I'd said this before we aired, but I don't think he was meant to have blonde hair.
No, no. It helps give the unnatural look, for sure.
It does. I keep trying to figure out if he's bald, and no, his hair's just dyed blonde. But good for him getting work. It is good to see our old friend Matt Smith again in something kind of substantial. Because I feel like I haven't seen him in anything huge for a while, so he's always a good time.
Yeah.
It has been a while since he's done anything substantial or, you know, like you said, big.
I mean, he's a British actor, so he's probably been, like, conquering the stage or something, and we just have no idea.
Our Americanized understanding of him being big or not, yes.
Speaking of people from across the pond, Ewan McGregor returning to Obi-Wan, another big trailer this week. We could play the game, which one are you more excited to watch? And we can also say general thoughts about how pumped are you for Obi-Wan in general by itself?
There's nothing that gets my blood pumping like a good Star Wars trailer. And I feel like this was a good Star Wars trailer. It had teased a bunch of stuff. Like there's going to be, you know, again, back to the Game of Thrones stuff. Like you love this stuff. It teased a fun period in that Star Wars hasn't explored very much. Looks like they're trying some kind of order, secret order or otherwise, that's trying to hunt him down. Mm-hmm. You were going to have bounty hunters in it. Obi-Wan's using a blaster for some reason.
That he hates, I'm sure. I'm sure he'll make his joke about it.
Yeah. Ian McGregor is always great.
Yes.
That's the thing about this one that makes me, you know, you said, which one are you more excited about? It almost has to be this because it will be, if he's the center of the show, is Ewan McGregor, like, it can only be so bad, you know? It can't go that off the rails. And I think this is, like, a particularly rich part of the lore, like, the time frame. Like, Rogue One was very good, I thought. I'm intrigued to see what they do with him. I'm super into this.
I remember a few weeks after watching Phantom Menace saying they should have just made an Obi-Wan movie. And I said that for years, and I kept saying it. And then you'd hear these internet rumors that maybe they'll make an Obi-Wan movie or with Ewan McGregor, or maybe then, of course, Disney Plus comes along and we find out that that's going to be one of the backbones of them making Disney Plus, is that they're going to do an Obi-Wan series. So am I hyped? Yeah, that definitely answers it. I think that this is even better than an Obi-Wan movie because you get an Obi-Wan series. And I've said it here before, Joel Edgerton, I'm telling you, they got guys who are going to act. They are going to act, and it's going to be good. Ewan McGregor can act. Joel Edgerton can act. Hayden Christensen is donning the Darth Vader costume now. How much can you act in that? I don't know, but just knowing that is kind of cool. Just like when I'm watching it in the back of my mind, I'll think, that's Hayden Christensen. Cool.
Totally.
Also, it looks like they are hyping up Darth Vader in a way that I am completely there for. It's like, I love the bit in Rogue One where they just shot Darth Vader coming in like it was a horror film.
Yeah.
Give me more of that.
I was going to say, all the things that were on the periphery of the first three movies, and especially the first one, maybe due to budget constraints or, you know, what special effects would allow at the time, that you kind of just had to think all these mythical things about these different characters. And it kind of made it better as a kid that, like, you don't see Darth Vader just completely do what he did in Rogue One, but you know that he's capable of it. You know, like, you kind of let your imagination go. But now that they can do these things, yeah, let's see it.
Oh, yeah, those first three in the trilogy and then none in the second trilogy, they had to be all tell and not show. You had to just say, this guy, Vader, is scary AF, and you just had to roll with it. And as a kid, I suppose he kind of was, but it got to a point when in my adulthood that I just kept saying, I really wish Vader could just go off. And then, lo and behold, Rogue One comes around as we get a little older, and that's what I want. I want more of that. I want Vader just scaring the shit out of me, if that's even possible at my age. But yeah, scare the other characters.
The idea that Luke had this very, you know, country boy existence in a way, felt like he was at the edge of the universe, but there was like maybe the most important shadow war happening at his doorstep the whole time, mm-hmm. is, I think they'll have a lot of fun playing with that. And honestly, you know, if it's just like Ewan McGregor being a hermit for a few episodes and just like meditating or something and wandering around the desert, I would watch 4 hours of that.
Smoking a few Marlboros.
He's that good.
Yeah. Oh, plus I'm a total sucker. I'm on record for being a total sucker for the mystic elements of the Star Wars universe.
That's true.
Like Luke running around or hanging out on an island for long stretches in the newer movies, by far the best part of that whole enterprise.
I'll go on record with also liking that bit, although sometimes the mystic stuff for Star Wars makes my teeth groan. I don't know. It makes me groan. Makes my teeth grit.
Why is that?
Because it's so, sometimes it just sounds so goofy. Like there was a bit in, I almost called it The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, but one of the Mandalorian episodes where Luke's training Grogu, and it's just so like non-specific,
yeah,
hippie kind of nonsense that it just makes you roll your eyes, because it's like, what is this force? Like there could be a cool like fleshed out mystic element, but it just seems like the force is kind of like generically like balance and order versus chaos instead of anything super interesting.
Give me Obi-Wan, the holy fool in the desert, pondering these things.
Mm-hmm. I'd watch that. Yeah, put him on a pillar.
Now we're talking. If Obi-Wan gets on a pillar, just know that I have run through a wall that week.
Hey, this show's going to debut in a couple of weeks. It's debuting before the end of May, right?
Yeah, they'll talk about, so watching these back-to-back, again, to prep for the show and thinking about dates, it's like, oh, well, we're going to get a nice little hit of this real soon, whereas the Thrones program, that's August. Who can plan for August right now?
Not I.
How about we keep it in the Disney Plus realm and talk some Moon Knight? Let's see if we can't rope Natalie into this conversation, since she's joined us a couple times in and out for some Moon Knight. And with us now, it's Natalie Morrow. Let's talk about the fifth and sixth. If we need to wrap those into one conversation, that'd be fine.
It's a lot going on in those two episodes.
It's a lot, but I really love the fifth one.
Okay.
And didn't necessarily love the finale, the sixth one. How were y'all on the last two episodes?
Well, the goddess Tarouet is a little much.
Just goofy, you think?
Just goofy, yeah. Huh. So I'm not sure about how the constant comic relief sat with me, although there were some cool scenes. But I liked the whole like Mark finally confronting Steven and where Steven came from.
Yeah, as did I. What about you, Natalie?
I really enjoyed it. I liked how they explained the Mark-Steven thing. Mm-hmm. I thought that worked really well. I liked that at the end of that episode, Steven appears to die when he falls off the boat. I kind of wish that he had stayed dead, I guess. I thought episode 5 was one of the best of the season.
I kind of wish he'd stayed dead, too, just because it seemed like it fit thematically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did, and it would have been heavy. But that being said, I did really like the Steven character, and I really liked watching Oscar Isaac do the Steven character. That's probably honestly more of why I liked it, because of seeing Oscar Isaac do that stuff was amusing to me, kept me entertained.
Yeah, he was at times it felt like he was doing his best Dick Van Dyke impression for Steven.
Yeah.
And but it's Oscar Isaac, so it was never anything other than completely entertaining.
Yeah, and a bit charming even at times.
Now, do you feel like the way that Hera was used in the psych ward was interesting, or did it ultimately end up just kind of underscoring that he was always kind of off in his own corner? He was never really, because the psych ward version of reality, his Hera sort of, it was great, but also it kind of didn't really have anything to do with the main story.
Looking back, I'm like, what was the point of him being, like, it would have been way more, just as interesting had we just followed the Mark Steven characters around in that psych ward realm. I listened to a podcast or something, and they were talking about that there were questions about, you know, was that some reality? Is the psych world reality the reality? And then they said, well, we already did that with Legion, you know, so they didn't want to play that game again. I thought that was interesting.
I thought it was fun. It did have me questioning every now and again, wait, is this going to be what's real? So it kept me on a string.
It felt to me like it was mostly there just to give Ethan Hawke and Oscar Isaac an excuse to be in the same room together, which is not a bad thing. They're both really good, and I think they should have had more opportunities to interact with each other in a way that didn't feel quite so segregated from the...
Sticking to the fifth episode, you'd think that with Disney money, they'd be able to spring for a better-looking version of New York City than some back lot in Atlanta. That was one of my biggest gripes out of coming out of the fifth episode.
They spent all their money on Layla's new outfit because they got one costume right.
Yeah, I was for that.
The one that looked the least CGI was the best looking one, I think. And that would be Layla's new costume.
Yeah.
Given all of Disney's money, the CGI was kind of wonky in this show. There were just a lot, just even with in the fifth episode with like the Ship of the Dead and whatever going over the sands, it looked more like a computer game. Which is ultimately a minor complaint because they weren't spending too much time on it. But it just, with all of Disney's money, you think, I guess you don't get that kind of Disney money by spending too much on your Disney Plus CGI shows.
Yeah, that didn't bother me as much as, because I mean, that's like, it's different when it's CGI, imaginary realm, world, underworld, whatever, uh-huh. Because nobody knows. Well, maybe it really does look like that, you know, who's to say? but when it's like, when you've got, I know I'm jumping between episodes 5 and 6 here, but when you've got the gods' giant forms fighting in the background of Egypt, it's like, okay, that looks stupid.
That felt so much like, did you ever play like Street Fighter or Street Fighter versus X-Men?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Arcade games, yeah. Like when you'd be playing those games and like your character's fighting in the foreground, but some other battle is happening in the background that is attempting to distract you. Yeah. Like the Sentinels or something are in the background trying to tear up the room you're fighting in or something. That's all I could think of. Was like, this is like the backdrop for a fighting video game.
Did the Ned Flanders reference at the end of episode 5, did that alone boost this into the greatest Marvel show?
Oh my god. What was the... I remember there being a reference. What was it?
Mark calls Harrow's Doctor incarnation Ned Flanders.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It just reminded me that Disney owns The Simpsons now.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's why it's in there.
I'm not so sure that the finale didn't play a little fast and loose with its own set of rules that it wanted to have to speed up the ending. That's the bad thing about these things sometimes, is the last episodes feel like it should have been split up to flesh out everything it sort of wanted to do. Mark resurrecting Steven, I was with you guys. That should have stayed put. Because if you look at Steven as an incarnation brought on by Mark's guilt, once he's forgiving and accepting of that trauma, then Steven's got to die and stay dead.
That's the way I saw it, too. It's like, it was kind of fun, like, okay, he's accepted Steven, and he's accepted that Steven's a part of himself, but that didn't seem like what they'd set up, that especially with the looking at the exploration of abuse and trauma. Mm-hmm. That they had in episode 5 and the really phenomenal acting that Oscar Isaac did around that.
Definitely need to get like a mental health counselor to weigh in on this, but there's certainly like a bit of, I'm pretty sure when you like reconcile with your trauma, that part doesn't just go away. Like it's like should be like a 2 becomes 1 kind of a situation, not just, oh, scary guy doesn't exist anymore, right?
Okay. All right. Well, if you're looking at it like that, then Steven coming back around certainly is okay and works.
Yeah, but they just handled it weird.
Yeah,
it would still would have been a better story had Steven not come back. But Mark should have evolved and grown as a person to where he still would be able to have some of Steven within him still, but just as a person, not as a separate identity. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not a mental health person.
I think so. Yeah, no, I think that's kind of right.
We're going to get letters over this one.
I know. Yeah, right.
And it almost did what Natalie said would be badass by not even mentioning Jake Lockley. It almost put that to a test.
It just couldn't help itself.
Couldn't.
That's how the mid-credit scene read to me. Like, they just couldn't help themselves. They had to get a little... They had this thing that they were teasing. They didn't know what to do with it, I think.
So is there going to be a second season?
No second season, but he's probably destined to appear in something. But he's...
They certainly set it up like there's going to be... This is not the end of Moon Knight, but who knows, right?
You know, to set it up, though, for him to only to appear in something, that's going to... try to resolve some of that in like 5 minutes. They backed themselves into that corner, because if he shows up in the next Fantastic Four movie or whatever, take your pick, then you've got him either not addressing the Jake Lockley situation or having to do it in like a 3 to 5 minute little scene, and it's not gonna work.
Yeah, it's gonna be distracting.
Uh-huh.
They're gonna put him back. He's gonna show up in the next Eternals movie. That's my guess. A character that we're not really excited about showing up in a movie that nobody really cares about. Characters nobody's really invested in. It's just, it'll be something to do on a Saturday afternoon. We'll go see Moon Knight and the Eternals.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't ever go back to Eternals.
No, but they have to now that Harry Styles is involved.
Well, they could drop him in anything, couldn't they?
That's true.
Next Captain Marvel probably would work well. Oh, hey, we're in space. There's Harry Styles.
Just where you least expected to see him.
It took me a while. I was never too certain who Layla was supposed to be an avatar for, but it turns out she was the avatar for the hippo. But I did think it was a very nice touch to have the dead people speak for the hippo.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
I did like that. So there were very small things in this finale that was okay, but the finales are tough, apparently.
Finales are tough, especially when you cut out most of the big fight scene at the end.
Exactly. You had to have them fight, huh? Even though Hera was not that kind of character.
Yeah.
Eh.
What is the alternative, though, if they don't have a fight scene? Which I don't disagree, but I'm curious what you imagine a conclusion would look like for the story if there's not a fight scene.
Donovan, I'll let you tackle that.
I was
going
to say... There isn't really one, and maybe that's a problem with the way the story was set up.
Well, no, I would say not so much a fight, but a certain argument, a confrontation for sure, but it doesn't have to be a CGI heavy fight scene. You
just
know.
A tussle.
A tussle or just a debate or a punch would work, you know? It was not a great finale. It was just, it kind of fell back on a lot of Marvel's flaws, I think. Yeah. And he had the door open to do almost anything because this never was ever tied to anything MCU related. They could have done.
That's true. It kind of reverted to the mean.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not anything we haven't seen before. Hey, it's still better than Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Everything is better than Falcon and Winter Soldier.
It's still one of my favorites. I think that WandaVision might have been a little better, though.
I think WandaVision is still my favorite one as a whole.
Where does Hawkeye rank for you guys? I'm just off the board now.
Very middle of the road.
Yeah, that's about dead center for me.
I'm trying to remember all the shows now. I think I would rank it higher, but the ones that I'm remembering, like obviously WandaVision is number one. Loki is a close number two. I don't know, Hawkeye and Moon Knight, I think those are tied for third here. And then Falcon and Winter Soldier is seventh.
Way back at the back of the class.
Seventh out of five.
Yeah, it's real bad.
Let's take a break here, and I want Natalie to stick around for just a little bit more. Do we have news for you all? We do. You may have already heard, but our newest podcast, Alabama Slam, will release its first episode on Friday, May 20th. Get your headsets ready as host Patrick Akers and Corey Hanna will dissect what they think about each week's episode of AEW and a little beyond that. They'll comment on the latest in wrestling news, and they'll even wrestle each other on occasion. So get your steel chairs ready. Go to our site. Go to any social media pages to find some links that'll take you straight to their teaser trailer. And Alabama Slim has their own social media accounts with Twitter and Instagram, as they'll navigate the way around wrestling more so than the Alabama Take does on its own. You can find all that stuff though at thealabamatake.com each and every Friday for them. And if you're already in your podcast app, fine, subscribe to This Song Sucks. It's another production from the Alabama Take. That's right, the third season of this hilarious, insightful, and very cruel podcast. This Song Sucks will be back within the coming weeks. Look for it in your podcast feed or straight from our site once again every Thursday. Thank you for listening to this show, Taking It Down. We're in any podcast app, site, same things. We appreciate you listening. If you have a time or a second, give us a review or rating on your podcast app. But for now, let's get back into our show. We're going to talk a little bit about We Own This City on HBO, but first, some very generalized thoughts on Doctor Strange. It's quite a possibility we'll come back to Doctor Strange maybe next week, depending on if anyone has bothered to see it. My overall impression was...
I was about to ask your letter grade.
I really don't want to even do that. Something about that feels spoiler-esque to me. I don't know why.
So I'll ask the same question I asked about Spider-Man, which was, did it feel too big? Was it overstuffed?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marvel might be hitting a point of diminishing returns on that, huh?
100%. This one had some Justice League-type problems.
Oh, boy.
You mean Ben Affleck was in it?
Jared Leto was in it? Because I will not see it if Jared Leto is in it.
No, I didn't see Jared Leto, thank God.
I'm glad we're on the same page with this, Natalie.
Okay, here's the only thing I'll say. This Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness made me really want to see Top Gun Maverick.
Woof. For something more realistic?
That's all I'll say.
Blaine hated it. That's what that means.
That's all I'll say. Yo, you guys go watch it, and let's come back and have a deep dive next week so that might give more of our listeners time to watch it. And no, I didn't hate it. I'll just clarify that really quickly.
You're just a really big Top Gun fan?
I didn't hate Doctor Strange. Let's get Adam back if he so desires. Okay, let's do a very big jolt, a very jarring gear shift into the HBO show. We Own This City. It's, I'm going to have to take a deep breath on this one. It's about a lot.
Speaking of fun and realistic, huh?
Exactly. Well, both in the concrete and the abstract, it's about a lot. So two episodes have aired upon our recording, and Donovan and I have watched both. It's sort of a little bit of a key to get into this lock to know that it's created by David Simon, Ed Burns, and George Pecolanos. If those names sound familiar to you, it's because... you may have watched The Wire. Both of these episodes have been directed by Ronaldo Marcus Green, and if his name rings a bell, it's because he's hot off directing King Richard. Why bring all this up? It's because one of the first searches on Google for this show, We Own This City, is ask if it's a sequel to The Wire. Although it's about the rise and fall of a particular department in the Baltimore Police Department, it's definitely not a sequel for reasons we'll explore and talk about. It's not. I mean, that's like confirmed. It just couldn't be. But you know, you could very much make the case that this is playing off the exact same ideas that The Wire has created.
I read a review talking about how it's almost more tightly focused than The Wire, whereas The Wire went and showed how the effects take place. I mean, you get a little bit of that here, but how it seeps into how everything is interrelated. This one really is more focused just on policing. Mm-hmm. And I think I would agree with that.
They're only doing 6 episodes. It's a 6-episode limited series. You can't do the sprawl like they did with The Wire.
Right. It's got to be... well, you could try. It would probably be terrible.
Donovan, are you a fan of The Wire?
I am a fan of The Wire.
Yeah. Hard not to be, I guess, if you've seen it.
It's been a while since I've watched it now, but... like you said, if you've seen it, how can you say I hate... most people aren't going to say I hated that, right?
I don't think so.
Maybe I hated the way it made me feel.
Yeah, and Adam, you're a fan of The Wire as well.
Yeah, The Wire and Treme both. I'm a fan of of the David Simon television experience, for sure. Haven't caught this yet, but it's interesting that you guys say it's more concentrated, because as I was thinking about the show, I kind of wondered if, you know, both of those programs were so jarring compared to what television was doing at the time, and now it doesn't seem quite as out there, so I wondered what he would do now, or what that team would do now. Y'all's texts were very interesting, by the way. in our group chat, that you weren't positive or negative, it was just like you both said some version of that was a lot.
Yeah, we put this and a couple other shows to a vote, and Donovan commented that he asked if our listeners hate us for voting on this one. That might have been the text you're responding to.
And why would they hate us because of this?
It's not exactly sunshine and rainbows.
No. Not a sunshine daydream, you would say.
No, exactly. And also, it's a show that is really explicitly putting itself into the recent history of policing in America. The Freddie Gray protests and uprising and all that kind of stuff are mentioned over and over. And there's a lot, even the intro uses historical footage from, what was that, 2015?
Right. 2015 through plus, 2017.
So it's very heavy and often the kind of thing that I just don't feel, you know, it's like three white dudes sit around and talk about it.
Yeah.
We're going to...
Well, and even if you rewatch The Wire now, your first episode, they're talking about reallocating resources to Homeland Security because of 9/11 and stuff like that. It feels enough time has passed that it doesn't quite have the same, I don't know, it doesn't feel current, you know, in a lot of ways. It's interesting that this one updates some of those things.
Adam's going to bail because he wants to avoid spoilers on the show, but before we get into those, I will say that it's really funny that Adam talked about how it's a bit of a shake to the viewer, or it was when The Wire debuted and people were watching it because of its style. I would argue that this one will do the exact same thing to viewers because we've gotten back into these wild fits of fantasy that television does. The way this show looks is, honestly, it's a bit surprising. They create these shows to look like your Law and Order or an SV show style show, and a very kind of bland looking show, while doing these massive amounts of unpacking of what America is. You know, they'll use the same angles and lenses in order to placate an audience almost before hitting you with this stark story that has no clear answer. You know, bad guy goes to jail. You know, that's usually your answer in Law and Order or something like that, but not here. Before we start going into the specifics of the two episodes, I'd say that this is the type of show that tells the truth about the lies that America loves from the...
Light viewing.
Yeah, just real casual. You could probably send some text and read Twitter while you're watching this show.
Of course, the thing about it is, while you're watching it too, it is a David Simon show, so it's utterly compelling. You get sucked in. Yes,
you do, and you're hanging on every word, even though you didn't understand half of them.
Well, should I bail so y'all can go spoilers?
Yeah, you might want to bail because we're going to get into the ins and outs maybe of the show, first two episodes.
Perfect. See y'all next time.
A thing I thought was kind of funny, but the way that it uses The Wire to inform what it's doing, even though if you haven't seen The Wire, you're going to be fine. But
oh, yeah.
It uses a few of the same actors, but in very reverse roles. Like that actor Jamie Hector is now a detective in this show. And he was one of the most scary, menacing drug bosses, leaders in The Wire, you know?
Yeah. Kind of a... I almost wonder if they're commenting on, this is not The Wire. we're not doing The Wire 2.0.
Yeah, it is something like that, probably. And, you know, the guy who played Poot in The Wire, he's a cop in this one, so you get some of those role reversals going on.
Yeah.
But it does something else that feels like a successor to The Wire, and it does not hold its viewers' hands.
No, especially with the way the chronology is set up and the way that it introduces you to its characters. There was a bit where I wasn't even sure that if G Money was a cop or not until until he goes, and then he puts on, it's a big shocking reveal, right? Like he puts on his vest.
And they play that on screen. It's very subtly. It's not, hey, look.
Yeah.
You know, they're not nudging you with their elbow at all.
It was so subtle that there was part of my brain was like, is he actually a cop?
I'm glad I'm not the only one. 15 or however many years after The Wire ended, and I'm very curious on how viewers can accept this sort of show. Although I guess most of the viewers are people who like The Wire, right? And they're going to be
fine. I guess presumably if you, or other David Simon shows, right? Like he's not known for holding people's hands, right?
That's true.
Like he just kind of like on a, he's known for kind of taking topics that may not initially seem super interesting and or seem like they're going to go one way and finding another twist on it. Like with did you ever see Show Me a Hero?
I did not. Oscar Isaac again, right?
That one's pretty good, but it's just like initially it seems like it's not going to be, the premise doesn't seem super interesting, and then it goes just because David Simon does what he does.
Yeah, that's his talent. We can drop most of the talk on The Wire because a guy who's not in The Wire, but he's an excellent and getting even better actor, if you ask me, is John Bernthal. He plays the sergeant in charge of the guns task force, which is the focus, some of the focus. And, you know, he's the guy who's supposed to get illegal guns off the street, which, hey, who knew that was a department? I didn't know that was a department in police divisions. And we need that, I suppose. How long did it take you to figure out he was not going to be the protagonist sort of
figure? I'd seen trailers for this. So I knew right away that he was part of the guns task force was going, we're not the good guys.
Okay.
But he's kind of shot in the way that it kind of follows him. So even though he's not our hero, mm-hmm. he is kind of our protagonist.
Oh yeah.
Because it follows him.
And I thought he might be, I should have known better with it being a David Simon piece of work that, but I thought he might be like the clean cop. I thought he might be the clean cop who does some of the right things. Because he gives this speech at the beginning, and it almost felt like it could be read as he's going to do the right thing sometimes.
Yeah, the one where he's talking about police brutality.
Right.
And he's saying that police brutality doesn't get you anything, but it goes against the job, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't serve the point of the job.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good, even though he's swaggering around and he's cocky, but it feels like he believes what he's saying there.
Yeah, for sure. It feels emotionally true for him. And I'll tell you how good of an actor John Bernthal is. You talked about his swagger. If you will watch, you get some scenes from 2003, 2004. If you will watch and strip the show of those dates, you might be able to figure out what time period, what era you're in, from how cocky he's walking.
I think that's absolutely true. Like he acts differently for even as we got to see him going from like the rookie cop to a year or two on the force.
Oh yeah.
Just like the little, he's not full swagger yet.
Mm-hmm.
But his mannerisms have changed enough that you can tell that he's being corrupted.
Oh, that's right.
And by the system.
And this might be a directorial choice where he plays a guy named Wayne Jenkins, and Jenkins, the first year, declines the coffee. But the second year, where he's introduced to he's going to field train another officer, he pours his own cup of coffee. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that you might miss, you might not. But it was nice.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I have stuff that I've seen John Bernthal in.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really loved him.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I think the things that I knew him the most from were Daredevil and then the Punisher spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was fine. I didn't think he was terrible, but I thought he was fine. And so I was kind of surprised watching this, how good I thought he was.
No, he's fantastic.
How good a job he's doing, especially playing, you know, he's playing the same character, but we're seeing him from 2003 to 2017, I think. That's so right. We're seeing him over the span of nearly 15 years. And just the way, you know, he's not doing anything crazy with makeup or anything like that. It's all in his, all of his acting is his mannerisms to kind of show you how this person has changed from 2003 to 2017.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with that.
There's probably not enough room for it. It would be kind of nice to see more of those scenes with him and what I presume is his wife, where he brings the crabs into the party and his friends or whomever they are, family, and they're just like kind of dissing the idea of him bringing crabs because they've got better food.
Yep.
It really helps explain, it really relates to the viewer, first of all, and it helps explain immediately why he would even remotely go corrupt.
Yeah, why would he think about pulling these things that everybody does, like trying to get more overtime, or what is it, like overloading the court dockets, and trying to, you know, make as many arrests as possible because that's what gets you more money. And it it helps make sense. It helps you see why this guy who comes in as kind of a fresh-faced rookie, why he starts to participate in the system the way that he does.
Though it appears like everybody kind of participates in it a little.
Oh, yeah.
On this task force.
Everybody does.
And man, this show, just like all of David Thumb's stuff, it wants to examine race, which cannot be untied from policing, politics, the enforcement of it, poverty, drugs. You know, you're going to get all of it here. And
absolutely. We haven't even talked about... I'm gonna butcher her name, but I think she's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. Wunmi Musaku's.
Yes, she also starred in Lovecraft Country, and man, she's great in this. You can see that she cares in the ways that she's using her eyes. You know, that's not too basic of an analysis. I sense that she, you know, she never drops her gaze. She stares at what she's trying to find out, or in the case of the interview with Young Moose, who's apparently, that really was Young Moose in that scene.
Oh, okay, that's a real
guy, and that's his real rap name. So yeah,
good for Young Moose.
Yeah. The show's based on a piece of nonfiction from Justin Fenton about what all of this is. Probably true to life to some degree. Using Bernthal was another ledger domain of the show, I thought, where, especially if you're like me and you just saw the show, you knew who wrote it, you saw some of the actors, and that's all. I didn't see a trailer for it. I just dove in. I thought using him as a possible protagonist, but only have him dissolve into a bit of an antagonist figure, especially in the final scenes of the first episode, where he's taken in by the federal BI. No less. You're thinking it's going to be Herschel. You're thinking they're going to get this Herschel cat at the end of the first episode or at the beginning of the second, and it's not. And then you realize, well, shit, they haven't really shown me anything about Wayne Jenkins that's been horrible yet. Oh, he's going to be horrible.
He's definitely not the hero. But you're right. I didn't even think about it because I kind of had it just from seeing the trailer. But he is sort of set up to be the cocky lone gunslinger, right? The one good guy in an apartment full of bad guys.
Do you get the feeling that every scene has at least one or two people who aren't real actors in it?
I don't know about every scene, but I certainly see some of that. Just like scenes where they're, especially with like all of the, where they're out on the streets, or like all of they're in big groups with like the cops and stuff like that. It feels, some of those scenes feel very real to life, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Especially the ones of, like, citizens filming possible police brutality. Or possible or actual police brutality. There's some scenes there where, you know, the folks in the background just seem like folks.
What do you make of the having the screen switch to typing records to signal what time period we might be in? Sometimes with it's all Wayne Jenkins' arrest or activity that he's doing on the job. What do you think of that?
Those are kind of interesting. I noticed they did that with like the camera time stamps as another way to show us where we are.
Yeah, when they're in questioning, you get some camera time stamps from like the questioning room, you know, films and records.
Yeah. It kind of, I think it sort of helps to flesh out Wayne's character a little bit. So you get a sense of what's he doing in his day? What's he reporting that he's doing? Or at least what he's reporting that he's doing. It also underscores that he is our, you know, even though he's not our hero, he is our protagonist. He's the person that we're, that the show is following him.
Yeah.
So he's the only one who gets the special treatment.
Yeah. He gets, we got to follow him to figure out what happened.
Exactly.
With the entire force here. Jamie Hector, as the detective Sean, I forget his last name. Jamie Hector is just, he's enthralling to watch. And he was in The Wire. And I love that he's playing a detective here because, you know, you don't want to typecast him. But it was just so fun to see him wearing glasses. He's out. Yeah. When he goes to the guy and he tells him, one of the last things he says is, you may want to put that, he's talking about his beer. You may want to put that bud in a bag. And he's not being mean about it. He's just saying, I know how my compadres are, you know. That was such a nice moment, and the way he played it was so much smoother and gentler than anything he did on The Wire.
Yes. It's just happening at a high level, and I thought that he was great as the first time homicide detective.
Yeah. Right?
And just the way they spend some time with him on his scene, and you kind of get the sense that like he knows what to do, but he's also kind of, maybe hesitant's not the right word, but he's still figuring things out.
Yes. No, that felt like a first or second time detective trying to do his job.
And he was great. Like, and it was something that he barely had to speak for it. It's all,
that's exactly right. Yeah.
What he did just walking around the scene, what he looked at. He said, I think, two or three sentences. He asked a couple questions. Most of it is just, for lack of a better word, his mannerism.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this, and another show where it's just like, boy, these guys are great. Like,
yeah.
Watching this is, you know, even though it's a very tough show,
mm-hmm.
watching it is pleasurable in part because, or there's a pleasure to watching the actors, especially everyone working at such a fine level.
And also, I'll get a kick out of having those aha moments. Like in the second episode, there were a few where you go, oh,
that's how it fits together.
Yeah, that's a piece of the puzzle there for you. And it's doing it at a faster pace than The Wire did. You know, sometimes The Wire would take four episodes, whereas this one's going to only take, in the second one, you get a few more of the links of the chain, I think.
Yeah, it all starts to click together a little bit. Or at least you can start to see some of the initial patterns, not all of it. Like, for instance, I don't know how the murder's going to fit in yet. The murder that
in the alley behind where they're putting up the fence
that he's investigating. I can't think of his character's name. I don't know. Obviously, it's tied in somehow, but
yeah,
how it is, I have no idea.
Yeah, everything seems to fit together in a David Simon show. So it's when you get that much faith in somebody. You know, it is pleasurable. You look forward to it. To see how some of this is going to play out. It's going to be a lot of fun in the next few weeks. And the promise of only having six shows, I don't know. That's kind of fun too. Just to know, okay, they're going to do this and they're probably going to do it well in six episodes.
Yeah. I tell you what, I was getting to the point where by the end of the second episode, when it ended, it ended at a point that made sense for it to end, but the credits roll and I'm like, oh no, is that it?
Yep, with those shots of John Bernthal just sizzling with anger alone on screen. Yeah, it's good. Well, that takes us to the end of our show for this week. We hope you enjoyed it. We always enjoy it ourselves. Coming next week, we could talk more on We Own This City. We could. Not sure where we're going to go, but in the meantime, you're going to find that This Song Sucks is coming out soon. You're going to find that trailer for the Alabama Slam, and you'll hear from us next Tuesday. Talk to you next week.